Chapter 33, page 402. Fourth saying of Christ on the cross, my God, etc. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Matthew 27:46. These are words that might rend the hardest heart. It is the voice of the Son of God in an agony. His sufferings were great, very great before, but never in such extremity as now. When this heart-rending and heart-melting outcry broke from him upon the cross, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. In which observe, number one, the time when it was uttered was about the ninth hour, or about 3 p.m. For as the Jews reckoned the hours of the day from 6 a.m, their ninth hour answered to our 3 p.m. And this is particularly marked by the evangelists to show us how long Christ hung in distress upon the cross, both in soul and body, which at least was full 3 hours. Towards the end whereof his soul was so distressed and overwhelmed that he uttered this doleful cry in his bitter anguish. Number two, the manner of this complaint. It is not of the cruel tortures he felt in his body, nor of the scoffs and reproaches of his name. They were all swallowed up in the sufferings within, as the river is swallowed up in the sea, or the lesser flame in the greater. He seems to neglect all these, and only complains of what was more burdensome than 10,000 crosses, even his father's deserting him. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? It is a more inward trouble that burdens him and darkens his spirit. The hidings of God's face, an affliction to which he was totally a stranger until now. Number three, the manner in which he uttered his sad complaint was with remarkable vehemency. He cried with a loud voice, not like a dying man in whom nature was spent, but as one full of vigor, life, and sense. He stirred up the whole power of nature when he made this grievous outcry. There is in it also an emphatical reduplication, which shows with what vehemency it was uttered, my God. Nay, to increase the force and vehemency of this complaint, here is an affectionate interrogation, why hast thou forsaken me? It is as if he were surprised by the strangeness of this affliction, and rousing up himself with an unusual vehemency, turns himself to the Father and cries, why so, my Father? Oh, what dost thou mean by this? What, hide that face from me that was never hid before? What, hide it from me now in the depth of my other torments and sorrows? Oh, what new, what strange things are these? Hence, God, to heighten the sufferings of Christ to the uttermost, forsook him in the time of his greatest distress, to the unspeakable affliction and anguish of his soul. This proposition shall be considered in respect to the desertion itself, the design or end of it, and its effect and influence on Christ. Roman numeral 1. The desertion itself. Divine desertion, generally considered, is God's withdrawing himself from any, not as to his essence, for that fills heaven and earth and constantly remains the same, but as to the manifestation of his favor, grace, and love. When these are gone, God is said to be gone. Devils and the damned are absolutely and forever forsaken of God. It is in another sense that he sometimes forsakes his dearest children, that is, he removes all sweet manifestations of his favor and love for a time. This desertion of Christ by his Father was, number one, a very sad desertion, such as was never in all respects experienced by any, nor can be to the end of the world. All his other sufferings were but small to this. They bore upon his body, this upon his soul. They came from the hands of vile men, this from the hands of his Father. He suffered both in body and soul, but the sufferings of his soul were the very soul of his sufferings. Under all his other sufferings he opened not his mouth, but this touched the quick, so that he could not but cry out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Number two, it was a penal desertion inflicted on him as a satisfaction for those sins of ours which deserve that God should forsake us forever, as the damned are forsaken by him. As there lies a twofold misery upon the damned in hell, namely pain of sense and pain of loss, so upon Christ answerably there was not only an impression of wrath, but also a subtraction or withdrawment of all sensible favor and love. Number 3. It was a real, not fictitious, desertion. He does not personate a deserted soul and speak as if God had withdrawn the comfortable sense and influence of his love from him, but the thing was so indeed. The Godhead restrained and kept back, for this time, all its joys, comforts, and sense of love from the manhood. This bitter, doleful outcry of Christ gives evidence enough of its reality. Number 4. This desertion took place in the time of Christ's greatest need. His Father forsook him at that time, when all earthly comforts had forsaken him, and all outward evils had broken in together upon him. When men, yea, the best of men, stood afar off, and none but barbarous enemies were about him. When pain and shame and all miseries weighed him down, then to complete and fill up his suffering, God stands afar off too. Number 5. It was such a desertion as left him only to the supports of his faith. He had nothing now to rest upon but his Father's covenant and promise. And indeed, the faith of Christ manifested itself in these very words of complaint in the text. For though all comfortable sights of God and sense of love were obstructed, yet you see his soul still cleaves to God. His faith laid hold on God. Eli, Eli, my God, my God. Thou with whom is infinite and everlasting strength. Thou that hast hitherto supported my manhood, and according to thy promise upheld thy servant. What, wilt thou now forsake me? My God, I lean upon thee. To these supports and refuges of faith, this desertion shut up Christ. By these things he stood, when all other visible and sensible comforts shrunk away, both from his soul and body. Roman numeral 2. Consider the designs and ends of Christ's desertion, which were principally satisfaction and sanctification. Satisfaction for those sins of ours, which deserve that we should be totally and everlastingly forsaken of God. This is the desert of every sin, and the damned do feel it, and shall to all eternity. God is gone from them forever, not essentially. The just God is within them still. The God of power is still within them. The avenging God is ever with them. But the merciful God is gone, and gone forever. And thus would he have withdrawn himself from every soul that sinned, had not Christ borne that punishment for us in his own soul. If he had not cried, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? We must have howled out this hideous complaint in the lowest hell forever. O righteous God, thou hast forever forsaken me. And as satisfaction was designed in this desertion of Christ, so also was the sanctification of every desertion of the saints. For he, having been forsaken before us and for us, whenever God forsakes us, that very forsaking is sanctified, and thereby turned into a mercy to believers. Hence are all the precious fruits and effects of our desertions, such as the earnest exciting of the soul to prayer, Psalm 77, verse 2, and chapter 88, verses 1 through 9, fortifying the tempted soul against sin, reviving former experiences, Psalm 77, verse 5, enhancing the value of the divine presence with the soul and teaching it to hold Christ faster than ever before. These and many more are the previous effects of sanctified desertion. But how many, or how good soever these effects are, they all owe themselves to Jesus Christ as their author, who for our sakes would pass through this sad and dark state that we might find in it such blessings. Roman numeral 3. Consider the effects and influence of this desertion upon the Spirit of Christ. It did not drive him to despair, yet it even amazed him and almost swallowed up his soul in the deeps of trouble and consternation. This cry is a cry from the deeps, from a soul oppressed even to death. Let but 5 particulars be weighed, and you will see, never was there any darkness like this, no sorrow like Christ's sorrow in this deserted state. Number 1. This was a new thing to Christ, such as he never was acquainted with before. From all eternity until now, there had been constant and wonderful outpourings of love, delight, and joy from the bosom of the Father into his bosom. He never missed his Father before, never saw a frown or a veil upon that blessed face before. This made it a heavy burden indeed. Number 2. As it was a new thing, and therefore the more amazing, so it was a great thing to Christ, so great that he scarce knew how to support it. Had it not been a great trial indeed, so great a spirit as his would not have so drooped under it and made so sad a complaint of it. It was so sharp, so heavy an affliction to his soul, that it caused him, who was meek under all other sufferings as a lamb, to roar under this like a lion. For so much those words of Christ signify, "My God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why art thou so far from the voice of my roaring?" Psalm 22, verse 1. Number 3. It was, too, a burden laid on in the time of his greatest distress, when his body was in tortures, and all about him was full of horror and darkness. He suffered this desertion at a time when he never had such need of divine supports and comforts. Number 4. So heavy was this pressure upon Christ's soul that in all probability it hastened his death. It was not usual for crucified persons to expire so soon, and those that were crucified with him were both alive after Christ's spirit was gone. Some have hung more than a day and a night, some 2 full days and nights, in these torments alive. But never did any feel inwardly what Christ felt. He bore it till the 9th hour, then makes a fearful outcry and dies. Inference number 1. Did God forsake Christ upon the cross as a punishment to him for our sins? Then as often as we have sinned, so oft have we deserved to be forsaken of God. This is the just recompense and desert of sin. And indeed, here lies the principal evil of sin, that it separates between God and the soul. By sin, we depart from God, and as a due punishment of it, God departs from us. This will be the dismal sentence in the last day, "Depart from me, ye cursed," Matthew 25. Thenceforth, there will be a gulf fixed between God and them, Luke 19:20. No more friendly intercourse with the blessed God forever. Beware, sinners, how you say to God now, "Depart from us, we desire not the knowledge of thy ways," lest he say, "Depart from me, you shall never see my face." Number 2. Did Christ never make such a sad complaint and outcry till God hid his face from him? Then the hiding of God's face is certainly the greatest misery that can possibly befall a gracious soul in this world. When they scourged, buffeted, and smote Christ, yea, when they nailed him to the tree, he opened not his mouth. But when his Father hid his face from him, he cried out. Yea, his voice was the voice of roaring. This was more to him than 1,000 crucifyings. And surely as it was to Christ, so it is to all gracious souls, the saddest stroke, the heaviest burden they ever felt. When David forbade Absalom to come to Jerusalem to see his father, he complains, "Wherefore am I come from Geshur, if I may not see the king's face?" 2 Samuel 14:32. So doth the gracious soul bemoan itself. "Wherefore am I redeemed, called, and reconciled, if I may not see the face of my God?" It is said of Tully, when he was banished from Italy, and of Demosthenes, when he was banished from Athens, that they wept every time they looked towards their own country. And is it strange that a poor deserted believer should mourn every time he looks heavenward? Say, Christian, did the tears never trickle down thy cheeks when thou lookest towards heaven, and couldst not see the face of thy God as at other times? If two dear friends cannot part for a season, but that parting must be in a shower, blame not the saints if they sigh and mourn bitterly when the Lord, who is the life of their life, depart, though but for a season. For if God depart, their sweetest enjoyment on earth, the very crown of all their comforts, is gone. And what will a king take in exchange for his crown? What can recompense a saint for the loss of his God? Indeed, if they had never seen the Lord or tasted the incomparable sweetness of his presence, it were another matter. But the darkness which follows the sweetest light of his countenance is double darkness. And that which doth not a little increase the horror of this darkness is, that when their souls are thus benighted, and the sun of their comfort is set, then doth Satan, like the wild beasts of the desert, creep out of his den, and roar upon them with hideous temptations. Surely this is a sad state, and deserves tender pity. Pity is a debt due to the distressed, and the world shows not a greater distress than this. If ever you have been in trouble of this kind, you will never slight others in the same case. Nay, one end of God's exercising you with troubles of this nature is to teach you compassion towards others. Do they not cry to you, as Job 19:21, have pity upon me, O ye my friends, for the hand of God hath touched me. Draw forth bowels of mercy and tender compassion to them, for either you have been, or are, or may be in the same case. However, if men do not, most certainly Christ, who hath felt it before them and for them, will pity them. Number 3. Did God really forsake Jesus Christ upon the cross? Then from the desertion of Christ, singular consolation springs up to the people of God, yea, manifold consolation. Christ's desertion is the preventative of your final desertion. Because he was forsaken for a time, you shall not be forsaken forever. For he was forsaken for you, and God's forsaking him, though but for a few hours, is equivalent to his forsaking you forever. It is every way as much for the dear Son of God, the delight of his soul, to be forsaken of God for a time, as if such a poor, inconsiderable thing as thou art should be cast off to eternity. Now this being equivalent and born in thy room must needs give thee the highest security in the world that God will never finally withdraw from thee. Had he intended to have done so, Christ had never made such a sad outcry, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Moreover, this sad desertion of Christ becomes a comfortable pattern to poor deserted souls in divers respects. And the proper business of such souls at such times is to eye it believingly in these 6 respects. Though God deserted Christ, yet at the same time he powerfully supported him. His omnipotent arms were under him, though his face was hid from him. He had not, indeed, his smiles, but he had his supports. So, Christian, just so shall it be with thee. Thy God may turn away his face, but he will not pluck away his arm. Though God deserted Christ, yet he deserted not God. His Father forsook him, but he could not forsake his Father, but followed him with this cry, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And is it not even so with you? God goes from your soul, but you cannot go from him. No, your heart is mourning after the Lord, seeking him carefully with tears, complaining of his absence as the greatest evil in this world. Though God forsook Christ, yet he returned to him again. It was but for a time, not forever. In this also doth his desertion parallel yours. God may, for wise and holy reasons, hide his face from you, but not as it is hid from the damned, who shall never see it again. This cloud will pass away. This night shall have a bright morning. I will not contend forever, neither will I be always wroth, for the spirit shall fail before me, and the souls which I have made. Though God forsook Christ, yet at that time he could justify God. O my God, saith he, I cry in the daytime, but thou hearest not, and in the night season, and am not silent, but thou art holy. Psalm 22:2-3. Is not thy spirit according to its measure framed like Christ in this? Canst thou not say, even when he writes bitter things against thee, he is a holy, faithful, and good God for all this? There is not one drop of injustice in all the sea of my sorrows. Though he condemn me, I must and will justify him. Though God took from Christ all visible and sensible comfort, inward as well as outward, yet Christ subsisted by faith in the absence of them all. His desertion put him upon the acting of his faith. My God, are words of faith, the words of one that wholly depends upon his God, and is it not so with you? Sense of love is gone, sweet sights of God hide in a dark cloud. Well, what then? Must thy hands presently hang down, and thy soul give up all its hope? What, is there no faith to relieve in this case? Yes, and blessed be God for faith. Who is among you that feareth the Lord, that obeyeth the voice of his servant, that walketh in darkness, and hath no light? Let him trust in the name of the Lord, and stay himself upon his God. Isaiah 50:10. Christ was deserted a little before the glorious morning of light and joy dawned upon him. It was a very little while after this sad cry before he triumphed gloriously. And so it may be with you. Heaviness may endure for a night, but joy and gladness will come in the morning. But, reader, perhaps you are saying, I fear I am absolutely and finally forsaken. Why so? Do you find the characters of such a desertion upon your soul? Examine and tell me whether you find a heart willing to forsake God. Is it indifferent to you whether God ever return again? Is there no mourning, melting, or thirsting after the Lord? Indeed, if you forsake him, he will cast you off forever. But can you do so? Oh, no. Let him do what he will. I am resolved to wait for him, cleave to him, mourn after him, though I have no present comfort from him, no assurance of my interest in him. Yet will I not exchange my poor weak hopes for all the good in this world. Again you say God hath forsaken you, but hath he taken away from your soul all conscientious tenderness of sin, so that now you can sin freely and without regret? If so, it is a sad token indeed. Tell me, soul, if thou indeed judgest God will never return in loving kindness to thee any more, why dost thou not then give thyself over to the pleasures of sin, and draw thy comforts from the creature, since thou canst have no comfort from thy God? Oh, no, I cannot do so. Even if I die in darkness and sorrow, I will never do so. My soul is as full of fear and hatred of sin as ever, though empty of joy and comfort. Surely these are not tokens of a soul finally abandoned by its God. Number 4. Did God forsake his own Son upon the cross? Then the dearest of God's people may, for a time, be forsaken of their God. Think it not strange when you, that are the children of light, meet with darkness, yea, and walk in it. Neither charge God foolishly, nor say he deals hardly with you. You see what befell Jesus Christ, whom his soul delighted in. It is doubtless your concern to expect and prepare for days of darkness. You have heard the doleful cry of Christ, My God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? You know how it was with Job, David, Asaph, and many others, the dear servants of God, what heart-melting lamentations they made upon this account, and are you better than they? Oh, prepare for spiritual troubles. I am sure you do enough every day to involve you in darkness. Now, if at any time this trial befall you, mind these two seasonable admonitions and lay them up for such a time. Exercise the faith of adherence. Cleave to God when you have lost the faith of evidence. When God takes away that, he leaves this. That is necessary to the comfort, this to the life of his people. It is sweet to live with clear views of your interest in Christ, but if they be gone, believe and rely on God. Stay yourself on your God when you have no light. Isaiah 50, verse 10. Drop this anchor in the dark, and do not reckon all gone when evidence is gone. Never reckon yourselves undone while you can adhere to your God. Take the right method to recover the sweet light which you have sinned away from your souls. Do not go about from one to another complaining, nor yet sit down desponding under your burden. But search diligently after the cause of God's withdrawment. Urge him importunately by prayer to show thee wherefore he contends with thee. Job 10, verse 2. Say, Lord, what evil is it which thou so rebukest? I beseech thee, show me the cause of thine anger. Have I grieved thy spirit in this thing or in that? Was it my neglect of duty or my formality in duties? Was I not thankful for the sense of thy love when it was shed abroad in my heart? O Lord, why is it thus with me? Humble your soul before the Lord for every evil you shall be convinced of. Tell him it pierces your heart that you have so displeased him, and that it shall be a caution to you, while you live, never to return again to folly. Invite him again to your soul, and mourn after the Lord till you have found him. If you seek him, he will be found of you. 2 Chronicles 15, verse 2. Wait on in the use of means till Christ return. O, be not discouraged. Though he tarry, wait you for him. For blessed are all they that wait for him.